Hey everybody, welcome to the Small Truck Campers Podcast, episode 13. We got a ton of really cool stuff lined up for this episode. Welcome back, happy new year, yada yada yada. Can't wait to talk about all of it with you guys. So why don't you grab your favorite campfire beverage and we'll hit the road. All right, we're on the road now. Hey, welcome back, 2024. Took a little bit of a break there. We had, it's always difficult getting podcast guests around the holidays. Everyone's traveling. Everyone's in transit. No one knows where they're going to be in a few hours or a few days. So we took a little break from the podcast. Also, I've been taking a little break from everything, as you can see on my chest. If you're watching, strapped is our little son, born about a month and a half ago, Jasper. So that's obviously been taking the front seat of all of the community development, community initiatives, podcast, Instagram, Facebook page, all that stuff. So took a little break from everything and still not getting any sleep, but I'm learning to work with it. So we're going on a few hours of sleep right now, and I was kind of waiting for a good time to record this intro, and I figured there's never going to be a perfect time. So I got them strapped to my chest right now. Mom's doing errands and we're going to crush this podcast. I'm so stoked. Episode 13. Can't believe we're here. We got some awesome initiatives for 2024. I'm so happy you guys are all going to be a part of it. I've been thinking a lot about what we want to do with the podcast and other, initiatives I want to kind of pounce on. So just excited to share that with you throughout the year and keep the community going. It's been awesome to reflect kind of on 2023. It was a great year just in terms of like growth and in terms of like engagement with people and the conversations, and the podcast was, the new thing for 2023, and seeing like people respond to that and enjoy it. It just makes me like, it's cool. It's really cool. And I think, the other day I was on Instagram and I saw a comment from somebody and it said like, oh, hey, I heard about this. It wasn't even involving me. It was on somebody else's like Instagram thing. It didn't involve me at all, but it's like, oh yeah, I heard about this on the Small Truck Campers podcast. I was excited to see it and see it online. And I thought, dang, that's so cool. Like people are actively enjoying the podcast and it's helping to get information out there. And then it helped to connect these two people. The guy was listening to the podcast, to the guy who posted about something. And that's what it's all about. Just kind of keeping that community conversation going and inspiring others. And honestly, just conversation. Super cool. So thrilled to be back for 2024. We have some awesome guests lined up for this year. I'm excited to see where the podcast takes us. It's already going to take us into new places and it's already becoming something that I'm just really passionate about and I'm really enjoying. I even bought, you can't see it right now, but I bought a whole new setup for the podcast. It's like professional, spent money on that. That was really cool. I went from starting with like the iPhone microphone, headphone thingy. And then I got like a cheap Best Buy microphone and kind of slowly upgrading and figuring it out as we go. That's what it's all about. And it doesn't, technology is no different than campers, and I'm just figuring it out as I go. But it's so cool to have this kind of professional setup now. I feel like where the podcast is going in terms of guests and in terms of like places physically, I need to have a professional kind of setup because that's what I want this podcast to be. I want it to be professional. I want it to sound good. I want you guys to be stoked on what we're putting out there. And I want our guests to, take this thing seriously. That's not just like a little cell phone call. It's actually like, hey, we got a whole system. We have the small truck campers 6-pack recording studio just down at the bottom of the hill, which I'm not in right now because I'm still trying to figure out how to use this stuff and it's easier to figure out my house. And that's the goal for the podcast. So taking it seriously, taking this whole thing a little bit more serious in a fun way, not in a serious way, but investing into better software, better camera equipment, better podcast equipment, better editing equipment, and really trying to take it to the next level in 2024. So cool to see how far we've come. Last year was amazing. Over 5,000 downloads of the podcast. That's insane. That's so awesome. Got to meet a bunch of people, got to talk to a lot of people, have some really good conversations. I think I probably logged like 2,000 hours on Craigslist. So that's a new all-time high. And we got a ton of really good Small Truck Campers merch into your hands with stickers, t-shirts, hoodies, etc., which is just so great when you guys support the channel with those purchases. My, this thing, full transparency, like I'm not making money on it. It's just kind of a hobby. It's a passion. but it helps out with, you know, a little purchase here and there just to help pay for some of the software and some of the equipment. So keep that in mind. If you guys are looking for t-shirts or hoodies or beanies or stickers, whatever, you know, coming to us really supports the community development. It keeps it going. And also my philosophy with like merch is I'm not just trying to like push merch, like merch, you know, especially like a lot of these people like buy my merch, new merch. Like, we're not trying to do that. I'm trying to take some philosophies I've learned along the way and, you know, produce high quality soft and hard goods. So t-shirts, you know, sweatshirts, hoodies, koozies, you know, those are your soft goods, right? Your t-shirts, your sweatshirts, then your hard goods is like your koozies, your accessories, your stickers, etc. And we're trying to use local silk screeners where we can, or use, you know, made in America as most as we can, and get high quality garments, so that way we're not like rocking these like boxy disgusting t-shirts that are print on demand. I enjoy the way silkscreen feels. It just feels so cool. Like, it's raised up, you know, the ink on the fabric, and silkscreen just lasts so long. So we're using our local silkscreener here in Santa Cruz. And yeah, we're just trying to get good products out there that'll last a long time. That'll look good in your camper. That'll look good when you're driving down the road, and that you can go to and trust that it's not going to be uncomfortable after road trips. It's going to last multiple washes. You know, it's going to last a lifetime essentially. So on that note, we have some limited edition beanies. I ordered like 9 or 10 blanks, you know, during Black Friday. And these beanies are so comfortable, guys. I haven't taken mine off. They're high quality, heavy knit. And get this, I got these beanies from Banana Republic. Normally they cost $50. Got them on sale during Black Friday. They had a crazy sale. I ordered like 10 of them. Lots of blue, couple gray, couple green. And I was like, oh, I need a new beanie. You know, all my other beanies like pill up, or they're super thin, or they're just like super long. And I just wanted like a good fitting beanie. So we got some of these beanies in from Banana Republic, reached out to a leather shop, and I do a little bit of leather work, but we reached out to a leather shop in New York City that has a laser engraver. So they were able to make these little tags that you can see if you're watching right here. Small Truck Campers. They made these little awesome tags for us. And then I have a riveting machine. I riveted these bad boys to the beanie. That way they'll just never fall apart. You know, the story, it comes like, I think there's a story where back in the Gold Rush days, people's pants were like ripping because they just got abused. So Levi Strauss like came up with a concept to rivet the clothes together so they would last a lot longer. And that kind of resonated with me, and I wanted to rivet these tags on the beanie because I'm like, dude, these things need to last. Like, they're going to be thrown around in campers. They're going to get dirt on them. They're going to get campfire smoke on them. Probably oil and grease. At least mine already has oil on it from, you know, Fix or Repair Daily 7.3. But they're just built to last. They're designed nicely. They look great. And they're at a pretty competitive price point, I'd say, for what you get. I mean, these things are heavy duty, thick knit, and I think you guys will really enjoy them. So if you're looking for a beanie, I think we got like 6 or 7 left. Be sure to check out our web store and snag one before they're too late. And get them while they're cold, you know? And another merch news, not trying to push merch, but just trying to raise awareness. We have these awesome Small Truck Campers long sleeve green t-shirts. STC on the front left breast. Obviously staying for Small Truck Campers. Established 1988, the year I was born. I don't know it yet, but that's when Small Truck Campers started. And on the back, we have an awesome design from our one and only Kook Grin Media, who is absolutely the most accessible and crushing it the hardest in terms of graphic design. And I dig his stuff. I think it fits the culture and it fits like our style so well. But on the back, we have at the very top, in quotes, dreaming and scheming. Below that, todos los días, obviously every day in Spanish. And we have the Toyota Chinook four-wheel drive popped up with a little surfboard next to it, underneath a palm tree, Small Truck Campers at the bottom. And this t-shirt, guys, is so comfortable. It's so soft. It's 25% cotton, 50% polyester, all recycled, and then 25% model, which I'm not sure what that is. But this thing is super comfortable, and it's kind of my go-to. It's survived multiple washes with the baby now, multiple spit-ups. And I just love the color. It's like an army green. It goes good with everything. And these t-shirts are available in the shop. I encourage you, if you need a t-shirt, a long sleeve shirt that you want to drive, you know, you want a comfortable shirt that you can drive long distances in, you want a shirt that you can, that looks good going out in, and then you want a shirt, you know, that kind of represents what you're about, dreaming and scheming, I encourage you to check out this shirt. It's amazing. It's super soft, super comfortable. I can't say enough good things about it. My whole My dream would be to have, you know, a couple of t-shirts, hoodies, and maybe even some pants that's all small truck campers, and all you need is like a few of those things and you're good for a road trip. You're good for a long time without doing laundry. You're good for not shopping for clothes for a while. I'm trying to keep that minimalist, high quality styling and also philosophy with our clothing so that you can remain equipped to rip with minimum clothing, but it's all high quality, feels comfortable, and lasts forever. And also, I just love the dreaming and scheming, because like for me, I can't turn my brain off when it comes to campers, and my camper especially. I'm just always dreaming of like, all right, I need to do, you know, I want to do X, Y, and Z. I want to get a new fridge. I want to install solar. And then like, I want to go on a big trip, you know, like I want to go up to Oregon. I want to go to Mexico. Like I'm dreaming and I'm scheming. How am I going to get this done? I want to do it. And that's what the shirt encompasses. Dreaming and scheming, todos los días, every day. That's also a tribute to Mexico, Baja, where tons of adventures lie. And then small truck campers at the bottom. Check it out, guys. I think you'll dig it. I dig it. And if you need a new t-shirt, I mean, support the channel. It'd be great. In terms of merchandise, we have some other stuff coming out. Not ready to share that yet, but more practical stuff that I think you guys will enjoy. So stay tuned as always, and we'll drop a line when that stuff is out and ready to be seen by the masses. I'm so excited, though. Merchandise, podcast, YouTube, Instagram, all really cool things taking off this year. And also excited to announce our Facebook group has officially launched. And our Facebook group is going to be an amazing place. It already is an amazing place where people can post their rigs, tell stories about it, share ideas. And it really is going to spark conversation. And it's really going to be a great spot for you all to get some more knowledge about specific things. So already, I think everyone that's joined has posted a picture of the rig. And there's already comments about, you know, how'd you do this? Where'd you get that? Any suggestions for this? And we're able just to kind of encourage that conversation a lot more than we could have with just the Instagram. The Instagram's great. I love seeing the comments, but I love the interaction on the Facebook group. So do yourself a favor, join that. It's going to benefit you, and it's going to benefit the community. And I look forward to the day when there's just tons of like tips and tricks on there. To where, you know, if you're encountering an issue or you want suggestions for a trip or you're looking for, you know, specific things about a rig, this is going to be the resource for that. It's going to be like a massive catalog of just tons of information specifically pertaining to our community, which is niche in and of itself, and being able to share those ideas from experts or people that have done it before or just backyard mechanics or just not even mechanics, but people that just like made some cool stuff. We'll be able to just to share those ideas and really grow the community through that. And also, obviously, Facebook is just so accessible. I think everyone has a Facebook, even if you don't go on it. But it's a lot harder to you know, not a whole lot of people have Instagram. Instagram's kind of like the relationship with Instagram, you know? It's like, oh, I deleted my Instagram. I need to get off Instagram. Like, my Instagram, I deleted my Instagram. It's like, Instagram's kind of moody, whereas Facebook, I think, is a little bit more kind of like solid, so... excited to leverage the Facebook group. I really encourage you guys to join. It's going to benefit everybody out there. And the more members, the stronger we are. It's going to be so much easier to organize things like meetups. Yes, meetups. That's something I want to organize this year. Meetups, rallies, you know, people just connecting with people. And yeah, it's going to be great. So do yourself a favor, join the Facebook group. And I'm excited to see that thing take off in addition to the podcast and everything else we got going on. Because lo and behold, the more that we get into small truck camper world and the community, the bigger it gets and the more people we're finding that are like-minded and can be more stoked to be kind of fostering that community. So that's kind of the plug on merchandise, Facebook group. I definitely wanted to cover that. And then, this year, just like I said, we have a lot of really cool stuff planned. My goal is to make it up to like some sort of event, be it like Outdoor Overland Expo or whatever, or like Descend on Bend, or some sort of event. I'd love to be able to like be there in full force. We got a baby crying. We got a baby crying. Stand by 1 second. We're standing up now. This is how it's going to be. That's totally cool. Anyways, yeah. So podcast, we got some really cool guests lined up for this year. I'm super excited to be sharing them with all of you. We have guests that have traveled around the world. We got guests that are living out of their campers, traveling in America, in Europe. We have some awesome manufacturers lined up, which I'm so thrilled to be bringing those tricks and tips. You know, there's so many camper manufacturers these days. especially since COVID, there's been like a huge explosion of people making awesome campers, and they're available now to you and me. And it's hard to sift through the Instagram, Facebook ads and determine, you know, which camper is best for me. What makes this camper different from this camper? And I'm hoping with this podcast, we'll get on scene. We'll interview some people, some of these, you know, manufacturers of campers, and we'll be able to share that information with you guys. So essentially there'll be like a catalog of all these different manufacturers and which kind of camper is right for you if you're in the market or you're just curious to know more about different manufacturers, as I am a lot. I'm very curious about that. And I'm curious like the entrepreneurial aspect of it. And I'm curious just like how they got going. What's their background? So all those stories shall be shared. And we got some really cool people lined up this year that we will bring that information to you guys through the podcast, which I'm super stoked about. Now, I'm going to shift gears a little bit because I do want to introduce our podcast guest. And this conversation is really cool. I think you guys are going to really dig it. This is Chris Clemens. I've been following him for a while now on Instagram. It's at Tarzan Camps with Turk. He's got an awesome first-gen Tacoma truck camper that he him and his family built out a couple years ago before COVID. He's taking this thing all the way up to Alaska, the Dalton Highway, down south to Mexico. He's got some big plans for this year. And what's kind of struck me about Chris is he's taken the travel concept beyond the camper. He's done a ton of international travel, and he's got some really cool stories and some just really interesting stories and just kind of an interesting guy. So I think you're going to really dig the conversation we have. And it was interesting to, you know, he grew up in Indiana, but it was really cool to hear about his willingness to kind of quit his job at age 26, hike the Appalachian Trail without any prior experience. And that segued, you'll hear the podcast. It's a really good story. But yeah, I'm excited to share with you. So without any further ado, I welcome Chris Clemens to the Small Truck Campers Podcast, episode 13, and I hope you enjoy. All right, guys, so with me is Chris Clemens joining me from San Felipe, Mexico, down in Baja, in his awesome Tacoma camper, which we're going to dive into in a little bit. But Chris, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for making time, and I'm glad you could be here, man.
Thanks. Yeah, it's good to be here, ready to talk about some camper stuff, share some stories. Should be fun.
Yeah, should be a great time. And like we were just talking about a few minutes ago, I've been following your Instagram page for a while. I'd say at least 4 or 5 years. So definitely one of the earlier people to hop on the bandwagon, or maybe you were just doing your thing and I was one of the earlier ones to hop on your bandwagon. But what inspired me was your rig and your camping setup and just, you know, your build out and then all the adventures you've gone on in that thing. And then you know, taking the adventure aspect beyond the camper, which we'll talk about. But for starters, let's just talk about, you know, your truck, your camper, where you're currently at, and we'll get to some background after that. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with us that information.
Yeah, so currently I'm living in this 2002 Toyota Tacoma four-wheel drive. I have a little Sunlight, I think it's a 1985 Sunlight Skyhawk slide-in pop-up truck camper that I put on the back. Both the truck and the camper are pretty customized, which was a lot of work. I'm sure we'll get into it. I don't know if I would do it again, but I'm pretty happy that I have it now. And it offers me these opportunities. Like you said, I'm in Baja. I was actually in San Felipe just 2 days ago, and now I'm in San Ignacio, this little oasis in Baja California Sur. So this rig allows me to kind of get off grid or do some long-term travel. I can work along the way, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's cool to think that your camper and truck setup, you know, initially I'm sure the cost was pretty low compared to like a sportsmobile or you know, a newer Tacoma, newer Tundra four-wheel camper model. So it just kind of goes to show what you can do with some elbow grease and some older materials. But yeah, I've seen that truck make it all the way up to Alaska. So what are some adventures you've kind of been on in that truck before this Mexico excursion right now?
Yeah, so the current iteration of this rig, and I've lived in several vehicles. I started in a Honda Element back in 2014, nice. And then I lived in a 85 Volkswagen VW Westie van for a couple years. And that was a two-wheel drive, and I always kind of wanted to do this adventure or go up to Alaska, but I didn't really trust that, you know, 30-year-old VW van to do those kinds of trips. So I eventually bought this Tacoma, 2002 Tacoma. It had a shell on the back. So for a year, I lived just out of the shell without a camper on the back. And that was a really nice setup. It was super lightweight. super off-road capable, could really get in the backcountry in Utah and Colorado. But I was cooking lunch one day in Bryce Canyon in a parking lot, and this weather was rolling in. I knew it was going to rain, and I'm back there boiling some rice and beans on my tailgate, and it started raining, so I'm holding an umbrella, and then it started hailing. And I was standing there in hail, and I had to finally shut it off and wait to make the rest of my lunch, and that's when I started looking for this pop-up camper. So it's been a process to get to where I am today.
Yeah, absolutely. But certainly you've landed at a pretty good spot, you know, and it's cool that you've kind of transformed what you found and made it something really unique. So that's super cool. So you mentioned you lived in a bunch of vehicles. What was kind of your upbringing, your exposure to camping? Where'd you grow up, and why did you start living in vehicles as opposed to, you know, get an apartment, get a job kind of thing?
Yeah. I lived a pretty normal life for a long time. I'm originally from Indiana, grew up in a tiny little town. There's three stoplights, maybe 3,000 people. Went to school in Indiana, and when I graduated college, I got my first job. And they sent me, I interviewed with a company in Michigan, and they sent me straight to Santa Barbara, California. I'd never been to California before, never even heard of Santa Barbara. And a few weeks out of graduating college, I'm living in Santa Barbara. It was kind of a dream come true. And that really opened my eyes to a world outside of the Midwest United States. So I kind of never looked back. That's probably where I more got into camping and nature, and I was doing a lot of running. My family, my aunt and uncle really got us into camping in the Grand Canyon, doing stuff like that. But what probably was the biggest thing is 6 years into my career, in 2012, I quit my job, flew to Atlanta, Georgia, and I thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. I really didn't know anything about backpacking, but I was standing on top of Half Dome in Yosemite with a couple buddies from college. And we don't remember who said it, one of the guys said, we should just quit our jobs and through hike the AT. So fast forward a few months, two of us did. And I spent 4.5 months through hiking from Georgia up to Maine, 2,184.2 miles, and 137 days of just carrying everything on my back. And I think that's when I got back to Santa Barbara, and I was living in a tiny apartment because it's so expensive. But even looking around at the tiny apartment, I wanted to own less and see more of the world. So it was a progression of getting rid of the apartment, getting rid of all of my stuff. And over the next about 3 years, I was couch surfing. Then I started living in the Honda Element on the street in Santa Barbara, still with a full-time job.
Nice.
Bought the VW, and I was camping and exploring every single weekend. But then finally, I got this freelance income, so I could quit my job and travel full time. So that was 2015, and I've been on the road since.
All right, ton to unpack there. That's
Sorry.
A incredible. No, it's awesome. So real quick, where did you go to school? What'd you graduate with?
So I went to Ball State University. It's in Muncie, Indiana, and as kind of a family tradition, my grandmother and grandfather actually met at Ball State. They were both going to the teachers' college there. And then my dad and my aunt have both gone to Ball State. And then my brother and I both graduated from Ball State. So we have three generations that have gone to Ball State. And I studied marketing with a focus in professional sales. So my degree is marketing, focused in sales. And my first job out of college was moving to Santa Barbara, selling cheesecake cutting machines.
All right. When did you graduate college?
2006.
Okay. So yeah, I'm from Ventura County, love Santa Barbara.
Yep.
One of my favorite spots to camp is El Capitan up there, kind of the northern end of Santa Barbara. What's your favorite spot around? If you could go to Santa Barbara like today and just camp for a few days, what would be your favorite spot? And if it's a secret, then you don't need to name names.
No secrets. I still regularly go back. I don't work for that company anymore full time, but I freelance for them. So I still manage all their marketing for this equipment manufacturing company, and they're still in Santa Barbara, right downtown. But we also have an office in Goleta near the airport. Ooh. It's in a little industrial zone, so it's not pretty at all. But oftentimes, like last winter, I spent 2 months in Santa Barbara and just camped on the street in front of the office, had the key, could go inside whenever I wanted. So that's what I typically do. But my favorite, and I used to do this when I still had my full-time job in Santa Barbara, I would take the Honda or I would take the VW once a week. I'd leave work, I'd drive straight up Gibraltar, all the way up to the mountains in the Front Range. Go along Camino Cielo, and there was one little turnout that just had a beautiful view of sunset. And as the sun would go down, you could see the lights from Carpinteria all the way up to Goleta. And I would wake up in the morning, make a cup of coffee, pretty much put the vehicle in neutral, and cruise all the way back down the hill and go back into work. So that's probably my favorite.
I think I've been up there before, to those mountains and those little windy roads up there. It's beautiful. I spent a good amount of time up there growing up mostly surfing and hanging out with friends. Mm-hmm. A beautiful area. So we could do a whole podcast about all your rigs and the Appalachian Trail. I mean, that's incredible. I had no idea you were a thru hiker. Is that where you got your nickname?
Yeah, so Tarzan was my nickname on the AT, so it's kind of stuck with me.
Okay. Dang. That's super cool. And what drove you to maybe not pursue the career at the with your job and to quit and just go backpacking? I think that's a dream a lot of people have, but what made it so irresistible that you had to kind of haul everything else to do it?
Dude, I'm not even sure. I guess I was 6 years into my career there. I'd been in sales for 3 and the marketing for 3. And I love the company. I still do. I still work with them. They're all my best friends. And I knew nothing about backpacking, and I knew nothing about the Appalachian Trail, but just something kind of worked out right, and I had enough savings, more than enough savings. It just felt like that opportunity was presenting itself, and it would be wrong to turn it down. And I'm super glad that I did. It changed everything. And to be fair, at the time, I was very corporate-minded. I was in the Rotary Club in Santa Barbara. I was the youngest club president they ever had in 100 years. You know, I was joining all these industry associations, planning to have that climb that corporate ladder and become super successful the way that you would think in a job. And, you know, I guess the way I judge success today wasn't even on my radar back then. So I'm glad I transitioned.
Yeah. How would you define success these days?
So I kind of, at the end of each year, I look at 3 things. Number one is how well-defined my wristwatch tan line is, and I've been in the winter for a while, so it's not very defined right now. So it means I'm spending time outside. Number 2 is the number of nights that I wake up in my sleeping bag. So even in the camper here, I have a full bed, and I could make a bed out of it, but I sleep in the sleeping bag every night. And the 3rd is I track how many different places I sleep during the year, and at the end of the year, just kind of look at how many different places I slept. And I think last year was a little bit low, about 71 different places. But I spent some time in Europe in some apartments, but I've had up to like 150 or 170 places in a year, and that makes me feel fairly successful.
Wow, those are amazing metrics to measure success by, and that's a really cool segue. And thank you for sharing that. That's super cool. I have like a question though, from a personal perspective. Did it scare you to leave corporate America, the steady paycheck, the retirement, to kind of go out on your own? I think that's a struggle. That's a struggle, honestly, I face with, and I'm sure other people do. It's a tough balance to strike. So what are your thoughts on maybe kind of long-term success, you know? Or do you find yourself that you'll be doing this for a while, camping and stuff?
Yeah, well, I definitely make a lot less than I ever used to. So there are trade-offs, but the... I'm rich in free time and choices, or in my bank account, but
irreplaceable things.
Yeah.
So how did hiking the app, you know, being from Indiana, small town Indiana, how did your exposure to both Santa Barbara or the West Coast and then the Appalachian Trail kind of, you know, what sparked, did that like light a fire? Did that keep the fire going? Cause that seemed to be the catalyst that led to the Honda Element, the VW, and now the Tacoma.
There was just something about, well, first of all, through hiking the Appalachian Trail is an amazing experience, and people from all walks of life are out there. I was in my late 20s, and so was my buddy, and we were kind of rare. Typically, it was a lot of kids straight out of high school or college or retirees. You know, mm-hmm. That's the demographic that typically has that much spare time. So it took a decision for us to quit our jobs and go do that. But it didn't matter who you were out there. It just stripped away everything from normal life. So you could be blue collar, red collar, older, younger, international, American. And we were all experiencing the same thing in the same way along the same path. And there was something very raw and authentic about that. And I have nothing against like living a normal life, but when I got back to Santa Barbara, I think I kind of missed that authenticity of living, and I wanted to get that back somehow. So I knew that, first of all, it's what I kind of call like living anti-comfortable now, but basically challenging myself enough. I don't want to be uncomfortable all the time, but a little bit is probably good for you. So to live anti-comfortable, I wanted to live with less, be more minimal and be more mindful of what I have. I wanted to physically be challenging myself. So I got into ultra marathon running and some other stuff that really took me to the limits. And then I wanted to explore the world and put myself in new and unique places with different types of people and just constantly almost feel a little bit out of place, which is what I've done the last 5 or 6 years kind of living internationally. So I knew that's what I wanted when I got back from the AT, but like I said, it took me a couple years, took me 3 years to kind of build that lifestyle around that anti-comfortable thought. Yeah.
Wow, that's super cool. That's really inspirational too. You're on this minimalist kind of soul adventure, searching for kind of minimalism, rejecting kind of, you know, stuff and wanting more experiences. And you said it took a couple of years to kind of get from where you were after the Appalachian Trail hike to kind of, you know, living in the car down in Santa Barbara. But yeah, that's honestly super cool. Let's just dive into some of the rigs you've owned. So what was with the Honda Element? Why did you choose that one? And what did you have before that? And this can just be couple words. I'm just curious about each rig you had.
Yep. The reason I ended up in a Honda Element is one of the best reasons possible. I already owned it. So I, of course, perfect, wanted something else. I test drove a couple. When I moved out of my apartment, I was couch surfing for a couple of months and looking for some sort of different living style. I was contemplating building a tiny home. I talked to the RV park in downtown Santa Barbara. They put me on a waiting list. I test drove a VW Rialta, the bigger kind of camper. But in the end, I already owned the Honda. So I drove it home and my stepdad and I took the back seats out. We built in a whole sleeping platform, storage. I had a closet because I was president of the Rotary Club in Santa Barbara and I still had to wear a suit every Friday. So it was a pretty cool built out rig. And it was all wheel drive and it was very inconspicuous. So I could sleep anywhere on the streets, anywhere downtown Santa Barbara, which, you know, since that rig, I haven't had quite the stealth camping setup.
Yeah. Do you follow that guy on Instagram? Heroes Hot Rods. I think he's up in Washington. They do a ton of Honda Element mods. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've even seen some really cool ones recently. I'm glad I didn't get too much into that back then, 'cause I probably could have just gone full scale modifications. Even the Volkswagen too was all stock and I never did anything on it. It was really until I got this truck and this camper that I went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. So the VW, was that like the Weekender? Was that the Westfalia? What kind of edition was that?
Full on Westfalia, 1985. All of it was original.
Nice.
By the end of the 3 years, the only thing I really did was put 16-inch, the black Mercedes wheels on it with better tires. But otherwise, I left that thing pretty stock. And traveled across all around the U.S., all the way across the Trans-Canada Highway from Vancouver Island out to Newfoundland and back. So,
damn. Wow. That's super cool. I had a VW bus in high school. I loved it, except for whenever I wanted to go do something. It was a 50-50 chance if I would make it there. Granted, this is back in high school, limited funds, limited knowledge.
Yep.
But there's something about...
Yeah. Everyone thought that I was living the dream, not paying rent. What they didn't know is I broke down about once a month. And finding those old Vanagon parts is not easy. And no one has them in stock. So I spent many nights camping in mechanics parking lots in the middle of nowhere waiting for parts to come in.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. The culture of VWs is like unbelievable. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Maybe four-wheel campers is kind of similar, but... it's just that, like the peace sign when you're driving by and stuff. It's just timeless. It's super cool.
I thought that I'd be...
So then we... Oh, sorry.
I thought it'd be pretty cool to have the VW, and I thought that being single, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. All these girls are going to love this. Yeah. As it turns out, the only people that really wanted to talk to me were old surfer dudes in California that wanted to tell me about the one time they took their VW down to Baja when I was on a surf trip. Like, those are most of the friends I made.
Totally. Yeah. I've heard some good stories. One guy I know took his down there and the motor mounts broke.
Jeez.
So they had the engine hoisted into the engine bay with chains, and they made it back to the border. Just like classic VW bulletproof, you know, but you gotta like do some finagling.
Oh, yeah.
So then we arrive at the Tacoma after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you probably took lessons learned from the VW. And what were we looking for in that rig?
Definitely something a little bit newer, easier to get parts for. Obviously, it's a first-gen Tacoma, so there's this idealized lifestyle with first-gen Tacomas. And I wanted one, found a great deal on it, but I really wanted something that was four-wheel drive. It's a five-speed. Since college, I've only had five speeds, or the van was four-speed. But it really checked all the boxes, and like I said, that first summer I lived in just the shell of it. We built a sleeping platform and a bunch of storage, and again, a closet for my suits. and I really spent the entire summer just doing a bunch of back roads, BLM land, national forest in Utah, northern Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado. It was perfect for that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So real quick, you want to run us through some mods you've done on the truck, and then also with the camper, and kind of, I guess, mods with the truck, how you found the camper, and then mods with the camper.
Yeah. Well, so how I found the truck first, I was actually traveling around. Yeah. I was in New Zealand at the time with a couple buddies. We had rented a camper van. We were spending a month in New Zealand, and we were sitting somewhere drinking a bottle of wine, and I was on Craigslist like I always was, and I found this truck for sale.
You weren't on Gumtree?
No. I found this truck for sale in Boulder, Colorado. My brother lived in Denver. So by the time Tyler woke up, the bottle of wine was gone, and I called my brother and sent him straight up to Boulder, and that day he bought the truck for me. So I flew home and started doing the mods. I'll go into those in a second. Then a year later, the same thing happened with this camper. I had just finished. I worked a trade show in Germany, and then I stayed and bought a backpack and hiked the Camino de Santiago from France to the edge of Spain. And I was sitting somewhere north of Barcelona, I think, drinking a bottle of wine and on Craigslist again, and found this camper for sale in Rochester, New York. When the sun came up over here,
wow.
I called them. They held it for me. I booked a flight home, drove straight out there and bought it. So now on international trips, I no longer get on Craigslist.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
and I dropped the word Gumtree there. If you guys have been to either Down Under or NZ, as we call it, New Zealand, gumtree.com.au is kind of like the Craigslist of Australia and New Zealand.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
In case we got international listeners.
Exactly.
Anyways, dude, that's two. I mean, talk about clarity, focus, and commitment, you know?
Yep.
That is just incredible.
And since then, it's just been.
I don't know how that happened, but literally all my yerba mate just fell.
It sounds like camper life.
Yeah. Oh, well. Luckily, my podcast stuff's good.
Good.
Okay, anyways, this has been an interesting interview. Lots of interesting things happening. All right, so, yeah, let's just briefly run over the truck real quick, the camper real quick, and then some adventures, because there's still so much more to talk about. So.
Yeah, so basically that first year is I did all the work on the truck. Not with the intentions of getting this camper. So it was a stock 2002 Tacoma. Immediately put a 2.5-inch Bilstein lift on it. Put some BFG KO2 tires on it. Put some new rims on it. Bought an ARB bull bar. Installed that on the front bumper. Put a Smittybilt winch into that. My stepdad and my stepbrother are millwrights, welders by trade. So we welded our own rock sliders and welded them straight to the frame. They welded me a custom rear bumper, which is pretty sweet. You can't really see it anymore with the camper on it, but when the camper was off, it looked really good. I put a roof rack on the first gen Tacoma. There's no real way to put a roof rack on the front, on the cab of the truck without drilling in. It's an extra cab, so it's not a four door. So I drilled holes in the roof. Two of them were in the wrong place, which worked out because that's what I ended up using to run the electricity for the light bars. But that was slightly stressful.
Okay.
What was even more stressful was putting the snorkel on. So drilling that big hole in the side fender. And then I think the rest of the mods were probably just in the back. Like the whole truck bed, we welded a steel frame for a bed, put down some plywood, did all the storage. So that's really everything I've done on the truck. And then the camper was all stock and original, so it looked 1980s wood paneling and all that. So I picked this up in the winter. I thought it would take 5 weeks to renovate. It ended up taking us about 5 months, but I stripped everything out of here. Went from a 12-gallon to a 22-gallon water tank, electric water pump. It came stock with a three-burner cooking stove, kitchen sink. It's got a furnace, a heater, which my van never had. The guy had already put some solar panels on the top. I just optimized the setup a little bit, so I do have solar and an auxiliary battery. We built a cabinet in here for all of my pantry and cooking and everything. It's definitely smaller than just living in a truck bed because there's so much space used up with holding the camper.
I see.
We weatherized the outside of the truck camper, inside of the truck bed. We weatherized all of that and put locking cabinets on the back, so I get a little more storage space there. And then recently, when I was just home this winter, I've been living in vehicles for so long, I've never used the refrigerator. I barely use this one, and it's kind of a waste of space. I'm pretty good at, when I'm in the camper, I just eat rice and beans and fresh veggies, and I can drink warm beer, so I didn't need the refrigerator. So
yeah,
I just took the refrigerator out and turned this into a cabinet and achieved quite a bit more storage space. So that's probably most...
Nice.
Oh, we put a inline tankless water heater on the back that's an outdoor hot shower. And then
nice, like a Camp Lux or something.
Yep, Camp Lux. And then
I
brought a bicycle home after I spent all of COVID in Thailand, and my stepdad and stepbrother welded a custom-made bike rack on the back end, so that's on the back now too.
Wow,
I think
that's super cool.
I think that's it.
I mean, that's yeah,
there's probably more, but I don't want to think about it.
I think the thing that struck me as the coolest about your rig was the table. Like, I don't know why, the photos of the table were super cool. It's like an epoxied in chart or a map or something, if I remember, remember correctly.
It was on the refrigerator. And I had plastered that to the refrigerator door. So when I took the fridge out, I was able to slide that piece of, you know, faux wood or whatever out of it. And we actually fashioned that into my new cabinet door. So it's still there.
Oh,
it's not on the refrigerator anymore, but it's like wood framed. I mean, I've got fake wood floors, fake tile background, backsplash, and my stepdad helped me, stain all of this wood. It's a little bit fancy for me being a dirtbag.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's great. So we're back from New Zealand, back from Spain. We got the camper, we got the rig all dialed in. What are some of the trips you've been on following those excursions to Spain?
So all of that work would have been done in the winter of 2018-19, putting the camper on this. I forgot to maybe mention that it is a very heavy camper. It's all wood framed. So after that was on, I put Firestone Ride-Rite airbags on the back and drove this straight from Indiana, where I do all the work, drove it straight to Utah. My brother and I drove the White Rim Road in Canyonlands. We got permits for that, which is really hard to do, but that thing is so bumpy and this camper was so heavy, it was just rocking back and forth. I bent the brackets to the ride rights and it actually dented my frame. So when I got to Phoenix, I had a custom rear suspension put on this. So there's custom leaf packs that are custom arched to hold this weight, and most of my weight is on the driver's side of the camper. That's where all the utilities are, so they even put an extra leaf in that to really level me out.
Okay.
That was a game changer.
Wow.
And all of this work was really done in 2018-19 winter, because the plan was, and maybe still is, to drive the Pan American Highway. So in the summer, I took off north, spent 3 months driving up the Alcan up to Fairbanks, drove the Dalton Highway all the way up to Dead Horse, jumped in the ocean, spent the rest of summer going down through central and southern Alaska and made it back to the States. That would have been the fall of 2019, and I just put the camper in temporary storage. I had some work to do in India, so I flew to Bali for 2 months, and then I was waiting for my Indian visa to pick up, and I was going through Singapore, Malaysia, ended up on this little island in Thailand in late February 2020. And within those 3 weeks I was on that island, everything shut down. And, you know, I'd had really, the trade show obviously was off in India. I had nowhere really to go. Everything was closing down in the States. So my options were to stay in Thailand on this little island where I was renting an apartment for $300, just blocks, just a short walk from the ocean, or come back home and live with my mom. So I stayed in Thailand.
So, okay. Once again, a lot to unpack there. Lessons learned on the Dalton Highway trip to Dead Horse and back. If you learned, you know, or takeaways rather, if not lessons learned.
I'd say lessons learned. I was overprepared. It's not as difficult as I maybe thought that it was going to be. I have a full size spare tire mounted underneath the back of the truck. I also took a second full size.
Can you restart that again? It just kind of cut out a tiny bit on my end. So yeah, lessons learned or takeaways from the Dalton Highway.
Yeah,
that whole trip.
I'd say lessons learned from the whole Alaska trip. I was probably more prepared. Over-prepared more than I needed to be, which is, to be fair, something that it's better that way than the other way.
Totally.
And the Dalton is hard, and it's remote, and it's rugged. The most difficult part about it is how remote it is. So I have a full-size spare mounted under the back of the truck, but I took a second full-size spare and put it behind the driver's seat, just in case, and a tire patch kit, everything. Two extra tanks of gas. So I never ran into any problems really anywhere in Alaska, and especially on the Dalton. You can do it in much less. I didn't need this rig. Honestly, like a sedan could probably do that with the right kind of tires. And so again, it's probably better to be overprepared. It took a lot of the stress out of that entire trip. I mean, 3 months in Alaska is not nearly enough. I definitely need to go back again sometime. And honestly, my biggest takeaway is I really love the Yukon. Alaska almost felt busy to me compared to driving through the Yukon. So I'd love to go back and explore more of that.
Wow. Super cool. Yep. That's awesome. Yeah, badass, man. That's super cool. So what was going on in India? Was there a cheesecake cutting trade show?
Yes, a baker.
Are we still working for the Cheesecake Cutting Company?
Yeah, so I still do some of their trade shows. I just did their trade show in Germany this last fall. But yeah, we had a bakery equipment trade show in India. And since I was going to be in the region, or could be in the region, they were going to send me.
Okay, that's what a niche.
It's a little weird.
Bakery cutting convention. Hey, man, they're out there. That's super
cool.
Hey,
everyone has to eat. So...
Everyone's got to eat, and let's eat some cheesecake. Yeah. So, Thailand, man, I mean, talk about your principles of, like, being, you know, slightly uncomfortable. I mean, I feel like once the kind of beauty, if it ever wore off, but once it does wear off, and the kind of the isolation maybe, or maybe the lack of ability just to go home, definitely must have kept you in that mindset of, like, uncomfortableness. Not to mention you were a traveler, so I'm sure you had minimal possessions. But why don't you tell me just a brief little kind of snippet of, it's like I said, we could do a whole podcast on each of these sections. I'm trying to keep it in the camper realm, but I am curious just to know some, you know, summarize that experience if you can in maybe just a short paragraph.
Yeah. Well, no one wants to know my COVID experience because it was pretty awesome. Thailand locked down. Thailand seriously locked down for about a month, month and a half. I was on a little island called Koh Lanta in the south, south of Krabi. And we were separated from the mainland, and pretty quickly things kind of got back to normal. I joined a co-working space when I knew I was going to have to stay for a while, so I met a lot of other expats and travelers. So I had this cohort of maybe 10 to 15 people that were really close friends. We worked in the same place every day. We'd go have sunset beach drinks and dinners. I mean, it was pretty good. I'm definitely not complaining. Yeah, I could talk about Thailand for days. After the first 8 months, I bought this bicycle. And I rode the bicycle 1,000 miles from the south all the way up to the north in Chiang Mai and stayed for a month. And then I rode another 600 miles on the Mekong Son Loop. So there's so much to explore in Thailand. I can't wait to go back.
Incredible. And during the Alaska trip, the Thailand, you know, India trip, you're kind of are you working full time, part time, or like how are you kind of financing these adventures?
So I finance...
Are you robbing banks?
I wish. I'd have more money if I did that. I work as I travel. I have several clients in that industry and a few outside of that industry. On average, I mostly live my life for the enjoyment. I, I pay all my bills. I make enough money to save a little bit, but I'm not wealthy by any means. But I probably end up working about 100 hours a month, maybe. So 20, 25 hours a week typically can. And I live okay. fairly cheap. I make most of my own meals. I don't stay in expensive places. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Super cool. So your footprint is pretty small.
Yep. Yep.
That's wonderful. I think that's the way you got, like you said, that's a trade-off. I don't think you're going to find a ton of business owners or millionaires, doing the truck camper thing just because they're tied to so many other obligations. And like you mentioned earlier, how you define success has changed from, maybe big 401k, big house, big car, and now it's transformed into, wealthy experiences, spending your time as you wish,
yep.
which I think people in like the corporate rat race look at you with envy,
mm-hmm.
because that's something that you can't just buy. You have to really commit to it. It's definitely a lifestyle. And vice versa, I think, a lot of people that are doing the kind of, not in a bad way, like the dirtbag vagabond thing, and I mean that in the most respectful
yeah,
ways,
yeah.
I'm sure it's lucrative to look back at the other life or what could have been and, oh, dang, that would be kind of nice. So
mm-hmm. There's
but,
definitely trade-offs.
It's
either way, there's always a trade-off. Someone at one point said,
yeah,
Chris,
100%.
They said, Chris, you must live this. You must have no worries. You must live this completely free lifestyle. And I mean, most of the times I'm constantly thinking about where I'm going to sleep again. Is it safe? Where am I going to find the
mm-hmm.
next public bathroom? Because I don't have a bathroom. Where am I going to take my next shower
yeah.
without... standing outside in my running shorts and not freak out some local old lady looking out her window. Like, I'm constantly thinking about
yeah.
this lifestyle. So not everyone would really like to do it, but for me, it works out well, but it's definitely not for everyone.
Yeah. No, that's incredible, man. That's awesome to hear. So like I said, Thailand could have been a whole podcast episode, but we're going to skip over that
yeah.
just to stay on topic here. You get back to the States, and what's your kind of next move after that whole adventure?
Post COVID in Thailand, I was back almost a year, and really based out of the truck camper. A lot of times when I'm back, I'm visiting friends and family. So I'll spend some time in Indiana at my mom's place. My brother lives in Golden, Colorado, so I just based out of there for a little
nice.
Bit. My dad is in Prescott, Arizona, so I have all of northern Arizona to play in, and then of course I have Santa Barbara, where I used to live.
Yeah.
So for that year, I kind of bounced around. I also started working as a trail running race director. So I help put on
cool.
these 10K half marathon, ultra marathon trail running races. So I was kind of flying around the US doing that. And through that, I got an opportunity to help manage a race in 2022 in the Kingdom of Bhutan in the Himalayas. So close to Tibet, India, Nepal. So in August of 22, I flew over there with my friend, the race director, and we spent a month in Bhutan hiking the Snowman Trek for 130 miles, marking this trail, came home for a month, went back and put on this epic 5-day stage ultra marathon race in October of 22. So that took me kind of back to Asia, and I stayed there again, came home for a little bit, so a little bit all over the place.
Damn. Oh, incredible, man. This is so cool to hear. These are some, each one of your adventures, I feel like, it's your life and it's just how your life is. But I feel like each one of these adventures would be someone's grand adventure that they wait their whole life to do, and you're doing one every 2 years or so, it
yep.
seems like. And that's just, man, that's incredible. You're definitely rich in memories and experiences. And I think you have an amazing kind of guiding lens principle or kind of northern light that you're focused on. It's so cool to see how much clarity and focus you have.
I think
it's awesome.
With some of those trips, with my travels recently, my clarity or my focus has been trying to get one of those flights paid for. So doing that race in Bhutan,
okay.
they flew me to Asia, which they would have flown me home as well. But since I have the freedom, I went back to Koh Lanta. I stayed in Thailand for a while, went to Cambodia, Tokyo. And then even this last summer, I ended up spending 5 months. My brother was like, why are you leaving for the summer? I missed the entire summer in the truck camper, but I had the opportunity in Germany. So I flew over early, spent 5 months in Europe from Istanbul to Bulgaria, hiked the Camino again. So for me, it's always kind of like, if I can get a free fly out of this, then I'm probably going to go.
Wow. Yeah. Even better. And there's a lot of stuff we could talk about just offline about timing, you know, and like, I'll segue that later. Anywho. So, why don't you tell me about kind of your adventure you're on now, what your plan is and kind of, you know, currently where you're at, or maybe not physically where you're at, but like where you've been the past couple of weeks or on this trip, kind of let's just talk about this trip a little bit more.
Yep. So I'm only about a week, less than a week into Baja, and having built this camper out to do the Pan American, I knew Baja was on the list at some point. The way I brought the truck in, I'm not going any further. I have work in the Central Coast in California in April, so I have to be back up. But I've got a solid 3 months with no real plans. I hate cold weather, and right now, all across America, it's pretty cold. I have some friends in La Paz right now. I've met a bunch of people in this campground in San Ignacio. We're going to walk into town tonight and have some sunset happy hour drinks together. I don't know. I have no real plans. I bought an inflatable stand-up paddleboard when I was in Thailand, so I have that. I'll probably kind of stay on the side of the Sea of Cortez. I want to find some glassy water and try and paddle every day, work a couple hours, enjoy some sunshine, meet some cool people, drink some cheap beers, maybe even some cold ones.
If you're so lucky.
Yeah.
Wow. That's super cool. So, that's just awesome. And are you... You've been meeting some people on the road. Have you like linked up with anybody to do some like traveling, or are you kind of more of like a lone wolf kind of guy that just, you know, kind of gets up and go? I know life on the road, you know, I spent a summer in my truck camper, and it's kind of lonely at night, or, you know, on some days when you're looking for somewhere to park, that's kind of like, you know, you're kind of like hidden in plain sight almost. Have you traveled, teamed up with anybody, or how have you kind of, you know, does that even affect you at all?
It can, yes. When I'm in the continental U.S., most of the time I'll travel where I'll go by myself for a week or so at a time. But then I'm kind of, the trajectory is going toward a friend or family somewhere. So being alone for a couple nights and camping alone isn't bad, because pretty soon I'm going to have that social stimulation again. Down here in these campgrounds, so far it's been incredibly social. So I don't think there's any chance I'm going to be lonely. As far as traveling with someone or caravanning or something, to be honest, most of the people I've met so far are completely on vacation. There's a guy here in a van from Florida who works as well, but he works North American business hours. So starting Monday morning, he'll be online from 8 till 5. So someone like that, I could probably caravan a little bit more with. But that being said, I really don't work business hours. I kind of make my own, so... it's hard for me to exactly find someone who really kind of meets my same, just like hiking the AT.
Yeah.
You got to find someone your hiking style. And for me traveling.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to find someone with my exact traveling style.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. And totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. You kind of got to be on the same wavelength, the same pulse a little bit in terms of, you know, time off or how you manage your time. And, you definitely don't want to get bogged down by someone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what does the next couple of years look like? Are you planning on more international travel, or are you planning on, like, I'm just kind of curious where your head's at with what's next, I guess, for Chris?
Yeah, when I have these conversations with really close friends. When I have this conversation with really close friends or family, I think I drive them nuts because it changes so fast.
Yeah.
But if you would have asked me this question probably 3.5 weeks ago, I would have said, dialing this thing in, spending the winter in Baja, doing the Central Coast stuff, the jobs I have there. Right after that, I was going to probably turn right back south, going to mainland Mexico, and really get on this 2-year plan to get to the bottom of South America and finish out this Pan American, which I still want to do at some point. But I got a call from my friend, and we think the event in Bhutan might happen again this coming October. So that, again, kind of changes everything, because if I have a free flight to Asia, I'm probably not going to fly there and fly straight back. So I don't know. It's kind of completely up in the air. If Bhutan works out, I might go back to Europe for the summer and then just hop over to Asia. So I have no idea, but no matter what, I'll still be traveling.
Yeah. see what happens, man. That's super cool. And you got to listen to a podcast I did with a couple El Truquito who are down doing that. They're in Peru right now.
Okay.
And they have some good tips about getting gas in Bolivia. I guess it's pretty difficult to get gas in Bolivia.
Nice.
At the local rate.
Yeah, so. I saw that you interviewed them. I haven't got to that episode yet, so.
Yeah. But there's some good lessons learned about fueling up, dealing with the cops, yeah. Just kind of all this stuff. You're kind of like, oh yeah, you know, I'm we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what are you like, how do I say this? Are you what kind of inspires you? Are you reading some books that keep you on the adventure train, or are you just kind of self-inspired? And I ask this because I've actually been on like a Mount Everest kick in terms of like reading books about people on Mount Everest. And that's kind of, it just inspires me to kind of, you know, make these goals, reach for them, do whatever it takes kind of thing. And I'm kind of curious, do you have like, are you like into reading or like what kind of, I don't know. I don't even know if this is a question, but go.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I know how I'm going to answer it.
Okay, perfect.
I don't know.
Because I didn't know the question.
Yeah. So right now I just bought two Kindle books. I do read a lot, mostly audiobooks. So okay. I'm still, nice. Don't play this for anyone in the Santa Barbara Public Library system, but I'm still a member of the Santa Barbara Public Library, even though I don't live there. So I still get all their audiobooks from Libby and Hoopla. If anyone's interested in audiobooks and they don't go to their library, I mean, go to the library. It's amazing. I also do Audible as well,
yeah.
But yeah, I crush books while I'm driving or running my long distances or working out or cooking. But this year,
cool.
One of my goals is to read a physical book at least once a month, which is still on my Kindle, but at least I'm reading. So I downloaded both of the Road Chose Me. Is it Dan Grek, I think is his name. So he did the Pan America and then he drove around Africa. So I'm reading that right now. But
cool.
My sweet spot genre is typically late 1700s, early 1800s, even early 1900s exploration. So like an Everest or Amazon or the Arctic regions. Stuff where with the kind of gear that those, and they were mostly men at the time, but those guys went into the wilderness with and the kind of struggles they had, especially being an ultra runner or a long distance hiker, just reading some of that stuff is, I don't know if it's inspiring, but it just blows my mind. So anything that's 18th 100%. Century exploration, that's my jam.
Yeah, we just finished a TV series last night. I actually started reading the book, and come to find out they made a short series about it. And it's called The Terror, and it's about these two British ships in the 1800s that were trying to find a passage above Canada from the Atlantic to the Pacific. And they get stuck in the ice, and it's a crazy, it's a true story. You know, the show is based on true events, but no one really knows what happened to these people. But they get stuck in the ice, and it same thing, man. Just the provisions they had, and the equipment they had, and how cold it was, and what they had to endure. You know, it blows my mind. So I'm right there with you. I love those kind of. I like old shipwreck stuff, old exploration stuff. It's super cool. It's super grounding, like you said, just to. The lack of technology they had and what they were dealing with, just to, you know, go a few miles, they had to pack up hundreds of pounds of stuff and like one at a time, take it, come back, drop it off, and just how it was, you know.
Yeah, it was just normal.
So I'm right there with you.
They're like, it's just another day,
just normal. Like, oh yeah, we'll be gone for 5 years, see ya.
Yeah.
Oh okay, we'll see when you get back, you know. Do-do-do.
It's wild.
So that's cool. Yeah, like I think reading those books or listening to them is just, it just keeps you like kind of in the right mindset. It's really cool. It's really humbling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, man, I don't really have a ton more questions to ask you. I just want to thank you for your time. And, you know, I think I was going to ask you kind of what you've kind of learned after all these years. I think your opening definition of success that really captures it. But is there anything else that you'd want to like leave our listeners with in terms of just, you know, ethos or mission statement or kind of, you know, and if not, that's totally fine too.
It's one thing I've thought about, and when I'm back traveling in the U.S. and I'm staying with friends and family, and I love telling my stories, and for me it's kind of a normal life, but I know that it's outside the norm for most everyone else. And again, there are definite trade-offs, and I don't think this is for everyone. I enjoy the trade-offs. It's still a challenge every day, but it's a challenge that I'm choosing, and I like that. but not everyone would want to. And someone at one point said something like, well, you probably think that mortgages and owning a home and all of this is just, it's horrible, right? And I was like, actually not. So I love my life, but I also need plenty of driveways to sleep in. So I'm all about the typical American dream, because I need my friends and family to have a driveway I can sleep in, a hot shower I can borrow, and laundry. So I have nothing wrong with any of that. I just, for me, I feel way more alive when I'm, like I said, living anti-comfortably, when I'm challenged every day, when I'm, you know, this lifestyle makes me almost be in the moment for every aspect of my daily life. So if I want to go get groceries today, it's going to be in a place that I've never been before, especially speaking Spanish, which is really rusty right now. So virtually everything I do every day when I'm on the road is a challenge, but it makes me feel alive. So I'm living a deliberately experienced life, I guess.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and that's a really good analogy too. You need the whole team to make the operational side of things work. You need the support back home. Yep. You need the people that are working 9 to 5 making the parts or paving the roads. I mean, it's kind of cool. You have this whole support thing that a lot of people in that completely flew under my radar until you just mentioned that, the driveways, the hot showers, so that we can enable things. So it's all part of the larger ecosystem, I guess, of life and life on the road and stuff. So, well, that Chris Tarzan, I don't know if you go by Tarzan at all or if you're recognized by that name, but, you know, we'll link to your Instagram below. I believe it's at Tarzan and Tarek is the Instagram. I'm looking it up right now. Have you right here?
Yeah. So it's Tarzan Camps with Turk. Yeah. I never really wanted to name the old Volkswagen van, but I named it Tantor, which if you've seen the Disney animated Tarzan movie, Tantor is like a brown, you know, lumbering elephant. And my van was a brown lumbering van. Even when I hit 54 miles an hour, the mirrors would just droop like big ears. And when I sold that and I got this, the Tacoma was a little more spry, a little bit more athletic and energetic. And Turk is Tarzan's little chimp friend that is flying around all the place. So this Tacoma is Turk.
Ah, perfect. Yeah.
So Tarzan camps with Turk.
Sweet.
And that Instagram is literally, I post a picture every place that I camp. And that's virtually all that one is.
Yeah, I love seeing those photos though and posting them and kind of guessing where you're at, whether it's, you know, tropical paradise down south or a desolate highway up north or a creek or a river or something. And I'm sure I'll link below. Our followers would love to follow along with your adventure as well and keep that inspiration cycle going. So,
which is kind of cool because
thanks so much.
I really only started that for my mom because she was worried about where I was camping every night. So I don't know, it's kind of cool that people actually want to see
there you go. Yeah. People, dude, that's what it's all about. Inspiring others. Well, thanks so much for making the time again. I really appreciate you hooking up the Starlink so we could chat. I'm looking forward to following along. I'm sure our followers are too. And we can't wait to see where you end up next, man.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. It's fun times.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.